We are back with our very special guests. Courtesy, by the way, of our social media director, Michael Snipes. Thanks for the foreword. We have Eric Goldman, founder, owner, and operator, and Brenna Carpenter, office manager of the organization Humane Homes. And you can see them and follow up with this, humanehomesnc.com. Who are they? What do they do? Their goal is simple. They remove wildlife from your home that has invaded and compassionately, in a no-harm way, relocate those critters. And then, after determining how the animals got in, they keep them out. So they figure out how to seal up those places of incursion. They do it without kill traps, poisons, or anything else. And good morning, Eric and Brenna. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Thanks for having us.
Doing great. Thank you.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
So I want to get to some stories, some fun stories, but we also have with us your partner in crime here. Would you please introduce your third member?
This is Gracie. She's a Jack Russell Terrier. She's 11 and a half years old. Had her since she was a puppy. And she's really helpful out in the field.
She's a working dog. Mm-hmm. So what does she do?
So Gracie, naturally, because of her breed, she is really good at seeking out small critters like mice and rats and squirrels. And in crawl spaces, when I started doing the work, she quickly adapted to that type of work. And so as soon as I open a crawl space door, she runs in, and I'll tell her to go get it, and she will sniff them out. And if they're in there, she will let me know.
Wow. And mm-hmm. So she'll ferret out whatever critters are up mm-hmm. there. Now, you encounter, I imagine, a whole lot of critters. You extract and relocate mice and rats and birds and bats, squirrels, the most common. Also some larger ones, possums and raccoons. Mm-hmm. I wonder about two of the ones that are cause for the most fear and consternation among homeowners, bees and snakes. Do you deal with those as well, or do you refer those out to the specialists?
Good question. Yes, snakes. And actually, it was because of snakes that I started the company. I love snakes. I hated seeing people kill them. I hated seeing finding them dead in the backwoods. And that's what inspired me to start the company. At first, I named the organization Snake Wrangler Rescue. That was the initial name. And my motive was simply to educate people about snakes and, if needed, relocate them. And no, we don't formally yet deal with honeybees, and we'll just stick to honeybees. But we do have a partner who's coming on board pretty soon that's going to bring that into the mix. Her name is Moya Halstein with Honeybee Gone.
Wow. Okay. So you're going to partner with the bee relocation experts.
Yep.
And that's a fascinating business, mm-hmm. Going in and getting the queen, and they all follow, and you can take the whole hive and put it someplace else. Mm-hmm. So you got into this business in an interesting way. You've been around for several years, but Eric, prior to that, you were in the biotech field, mm-hmm. Studied biotech research in Florida, worked for a variety of biotech companies in research and sales, relocated, it looks like, to the Raleigh-Durham area mm-hmm. in the early aughts. Mm-hmm. What brought you here, first of all?
So I studied wildlife biology at Florida State, and that was my first lifelong passion was wildlife biology, and then took a detour into laboratory research, and which led me into a career in biotech sales, which from Texas brought me to RTP, which, as we all know, is a hotbed for that type of work. So
it was a job that brought mm-hmm. you here. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then your interest in critters, obviously you're a dog lover and an animal welfare advocate. But what made you decide to just get out of the biotech field and start Humane Homes?
Good question.
It was around
midlife and looking to do something different. Was getting burnt out with corporate life and traveling 50% of the time.
We understand that here at WHUP, yes.
Yes, and wanting to do my own thing and really putting together many of my life's passions. And when I made the decision to move out of the professional field that I was in and was doing some creative conjuring, so to say, of what I'll do next, and this idea came to me. It had been simmering in my mind and my consciousness for quite a while, and wanting to approach it from a way that didn't involve killing or harming the animals.
Yeah, and did you scout around and see, were there any other businesses or organizations that also did this, or was there a big gap in the Triangle area as far as these services were concerned?
Like a lot of things, it was passion. It was passion and a desire to educate people. I really didn't do a lot of research. I wasn't interested. I just wanted to find a way to help educate people about snakes and wildlife. And again, I was leading with this idea about snakes, but very quickly, a couple people that were close to me came to me and said they had other wildlife issues that they wanted help with. And from there, it grew very quickly.
Also with us, Brenna Carpenter, the office manager. So you are basically the 911 operator. People call and you answer the phone. Are they often panicked? Are they wondering what to do because they have discovered something in their homes that was unexpected? And because we are so often disassociated from nature, we have no idea what to do except to consider killing them.
You nailed it. Yes. So people call panicked. And basically the disconnection from nature and kind of helping them get back to that. But yeah, so when people call, like just the other day, there was a woman who called and she was like, okay, so there's something living and pooping and possibly reproducing in my attic. I'm going to burn the place down. I'm done. And then we get to talk them down. And as you said, kind of remind them of, okay, so this animal doesn't have anything out for you. It's probably not laughing at you. We don't know. But there are natural rhythms, and it's just looking to fulfill its needs.
Yeah.
And your
just
home
doing
was
what,
open.
Yes, your home was open. And so they found a way in, and they're just taking refuge and living their lives. So the people also on your team who get dispatched to these homes, wildlife exclusion techs, you have three of them now. And they're all certified wildlife damage control agents. And this is important, number one, because in order to trap wildlife, you have to be certified in the state of North Carolina. But how do you get certified, and how did you find your three techs?
Oh, great question. So to get certified, you go through the state North Carolina Wildlife Resource Commission. They offer a course periodically, and that basically educates you about wildlife methods that can and can't be used, which animals can and can't be relocated, and why. And once you complete the course, you're given a pack of permits. So when you go to the client's home, before you set traps, you're required to get a signature from the client, basically letting them know what you're doing and what's going to happen with the animals.
Okay.
And our techs, we have a great team. Lawrence, Phil, and Mason are just fantastic. They're so grateful to have a team that's cohesive, that works well with each other, works well with the clients, and we have great clients. You know, one of the mottos that I came up with very early on, or maybe even a mantra, is that I'm doing great work for great clients for a great cause. And I've added, you know, we're a great team doing great work for great clients for a great cause, and that's continued to show up in the way that we do our work.
Were your techs certified before they came to you, or did they just come to you saying, I'm really interested in this, and then you got them certified and then brought them into the team?
Yeah, the latter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Now, Brenna, when you get a call, what are some of the more outlandish calls you've had, and are there things that you just can't, as Eric said, relocate legally, and what do you do under those circumstances when you get a call? It's like, I'm not sure we can handle this.
Well, off the top of my head, I would definitely say pets. We don't deal with domestic animals. So like a cat in the tree, we'd love to help. can't help with that. And like a rabid dog.
Call the fire department.
Yeah.
So rabid, or perceived to be rabid, because you never know really, but if you see something that appears to be rabid, that's not your department. That's animal control. Yeah, there are plenty of others.
There's a yes and no with that, actually. First of all, we've done a lot of jobs at this point, and we've never encountered a rabid animal, first of all, because the incidence of rabies is actually
pretty low.
Four cases
in Orange County last year, I think. Not that many.
Right. So if we were to encounter a rabid animal that needed to be put down, then we would bring in other, you know, other organizations to help with that.
Okay.
But and also a very important distinction, clarification, is that the state tells us that there's animals we can and can't relocate. You cannot relocate rodents such as mice and rats. So any trapping that's done, if a mouse or a rat is trapped, they have to be released on the property. Raccoons, if you take them off the property, they have to be euthanized. So we have practices that ensure that the animals can stay on their home turf. So if you have a raccoon in your attic, or an opossum, or a squirrel for that matter, the best thing for the animals to stay where they grew up, where they were born and raised. So with some exceptions, we will design our exclusion process for the animal to stay in that, on that property.
Right.
And then making sure that there's just no way for them to get back in.
Of course, they don't respect property lines, but in that general vicinity, on their home territory,
exactly,
that they've already carved out.
Exactly. It's, and then there are the exceptions. We will relocate if necessary. a lot of people think that that's like what we do every day, all day. And realistically, if we're doing the exclusion process and reinforcement process correctly, which we strive to do every day, then the wildlife living in their home turf is not going to be a threat to your home. And because relocation is sometimes necessary, but it's also not the best thing for the animal. It's like taking one of us and dropping us off in a country we've never been to with no money, no clothes, and telling us to try to survive.
Of course, anybody who's had mice and released them, trapped them with have-a-heart traps as I do, and then released them back on the property knows they will just come right back to where they had been because they're smart that way. So a big part of what you do is then prevent them from getting back to where they had been. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of construction involved in that. So your techs have construction expertise. You have a little bit of a construction background yourself. Mm-hmm. So that's really important. Can often be a challenge just to find the point of incursion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can be. Right now we're working with the flying squirrel situation. And flying squirrels can get in through an opening that's about maybe an inch and a half tall by about, maybe about the same width. And they generally don't rip it open and gnaw it open like a gray squirrel does. So I consider them like ninja gray squirrels. They're really stealthy, they're really quiet and careful about what they do. And I also personally think they're the cutest creature that we deal with. They're exclusively nocturnal, and most people have never seen them because of that, although they're very common in North Carolina. So finding the opening where a flying squirrel gets in is very challenging. For mice, we're looking for something the size of a pinky or bigger.
Wow.
So it's a very tedious process, especially with mice. But with gray squirrels, you know, raccoons, possums, it's usually very obvious. With obviously the smaller the animal is, the harder it can be to find it.
And black snakes, my neighbor has a chicken coop, and he is a handy guy. He has tried to seal up every available point of entry that he possibly can, and it's impossible. Mm-hmm. They can squeeze themselves down to, you know, I don't know how thin, but they're getting in somehow, and they would have to be like half an inch wide in order to get through these places, mm-hmm, to get to the chicken eggs.
Exactly.
How are you able in some cases to identify these places? Because if you have a big house, mm-hmm, and you are looking for an opening the size of a pinky, what's the process? You have to be methodical, I guess, map it all out and then just go over it,
yep,
basically inch by inch. Is that how the techs work?
More or less. You know, if a mouse can get in, we'll talk about the crawl space. The crawl space tends to be the central setting or ground zero for what's happening. If a mouse can get into your crawl space, it will find its way into your substructure and potentially into your living space. If a mouse can get in through the hole and the mice are building up a population for long enough, you better believe the snakes are going to be right behind them. So it's nobody wants to say it out loud or admit it or hear it, but the reality is that if you have mice getting in, there's a good chance the snakes are going to follow. And yes, we do get calls with snakes in the house. Not all the time, not every day, but it does. It's not uncommon. So if a mouse can get in through that hole, then the snake can. A bigger snake, it all comes down to size. So a snake that was born, you know, two months ago that's, you know, a quarter inch in diameter, like keeping that out is going to be almost impossible. So really small snakes or even lizards, because they can squeeze through such tiny cracks. So we have a minimum that we can deal with realistically. But we do start and focus heavily on the crawl space and make sure that every possible area around the crawl space is sealed.
And then the attic space would be the second, number two, I imagine, mm-hmm. because there's always those little gaps up there in the eaves or wherever it is, especially in older homes that have separated over time, the roof where it meets the soffit or whatever, there's always going to be a little bit of a space. So that's the other place where you focus your efforts, depending on mm-hmm. where you find evidence that the animals have been.
Exactly. Two of our most common services are crawl space details and roof details. Both of those, we're looking for every possible access point and filling it as we go. And then if more involved methods or comprehensive methods are needed, then we'll apply that. And you mentioned what we call the roof gap, which is where the decking of the roof meets or should meet the fascia, but oftentimes there's a gap. And most homes around here don't have drip edge flashing because it's not yet code, the last I heard. So we do end up reinforcing a lot of roof edges and other materials to seal up the roof, whether it's the ridge vent cap, the roof edge, or we call them soffit pockets, wherever soffit meets shingles. There's a lot of gaps there too. So yeah, we do have it systematized pretty well.
Eric Goldman and Brenna Carpenter with the organization Humane Homes, humanehomesnc.com, if you want to find out more about them and the services they provide, how they work. But we're not quite done yet.
Oh, we're not?
Don't be high-fiving yourselves. Brenna, how many calls are you getting on an average day?
In the winter, it slows down, maybe 6 or so, and then in the warmer months could be well over 10.
Per day?
Yeah, wow. And it really, like, when it rains, it pours, so there it, you know, ebbs and flows.
That's a lot. That's maybe more than I would expect. And how do people find you generally? Do you ask?
Yeah, we do actually. And it's mostly word of mouth. So Facebook groups or personal interaction or like Nextdoor.
Nextdoor. There is some value to Nextdoor, apparently. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah.
Does it usually require one or more than one of your techs to deal with a particular situation, or does it depend on the degree of incursion, the gap sizes, and how many animals happen to be living in a particular space?
Generally, we have more than one tech on a job just for efficiency. You know, when two people work together, it creates a synergy. If it's a small job, you know, we will send one person out. If it's follow-up trapping, one person goes out. So it does depend a lot on the job size and the complexity. The average job could take, you know, a half a day or a whole day. Bigger jobs could take several days, depending on how much preventative work is involved.
So when someone calls you, Brenna, you will get the information, the details, and then someone, maybe you, Eric, will go and do an assessment mm-hmm. and give them an estimate of what this will cost and how the job will take shape. Is that right?
Correct.
Right. Mm. And we break it down in the estimate, so it's not this lump sum. And we really have good descriptions that let you know, this is why we need this. This is the description of this part. It's not just the whole job, the whole house is going to cost X, Y, Z.
All right. Brenna, what's your background and how did you arrive at Humane Homes?
Yeah. So I've always loved animals, plants, environmentalism. But as I got older, I just felt more and more this nagging lack of like there was a disconnect between like environmental justice and social justice. So I went back to college at Guilford for community and justice studies, minored in peace and conflict studies, because I want to know why people make the same mistakes over and over again.
Oh, gosh.
And identifying
that's
needs.
That's a lifetime study.
Yeah. And identifying needs and getting those needs met. So this was such a great fit.
And you've been working there since?
Since I graduated in 2020.
Wow. Okay. So you're still fresh off the boat, basically, but found a great job. Well, that's quite remarkable. A good bit of good fortune. You just looked on the online listings, and there it was?
Well, it's funny. So much comes together through word of mouth, and it just fell together. Eric posted a simple social media post asking, you know, he was thinking about developing this position, and I reached out. We had an amazing conversation about like the paradigm of the company and what we're trying to accomplish and how we accomplish that in very real, everyday, accessible, like what that means in real life, day to day. And we had a great conversation, and from there, I definitely wanted to apply.
Okay. Well, a story or two in conclusion here. Give us some good stories. Like, what's the most bizarre creature you've ever encountered in all these years of work?
Great question as well. I do hear that one quite a bit, and we're in a state or a part of the country that the selection of wildlife that are affecting the homes is pretty standard. I think a lot of people are looking for something more sensational, like, you know, an 8-foot alligator or a 20-foot python. Haven't had any of those come up yet.
You weren't involved in the zebra cobra rescue there in Raleigh, no.
No. So it comes down to, like, you know, I love bats. I love the flying squirrels. Just from a beauty perspective, from, you know, what they can do, what they can in those little bodies, you know.
And flying squirrels, we call them the most common mammal that nobody knows about in North Carolina.
Exactly. You know, being in attic spaces up close with, you know, being able to see bats in their roost up close, on rare occasions when we do need to trap, like we just happened to catch two flying squirrels in one trap, and seeing them up close and taking them to a friend's property and releasing them. Again, you know, being a lover of snakes, every time I get a copperhead call, I'm thrilled. You know, usually the people that are expecting me to come waiting for me are not terribly thrilled, but I am.
So you have to be careful with some creatures which are more aggressive than others. Have you ever had any close calls, you or your crew, as far as an aggressive snake or cornered raccoon? Mm-hmm. Those, you know, cornered raccoons are not to be messed with.
Yeah, and fortunately, with our methodology, because we're using passive exclusion methods, in most situations we're installing a one-way door. So the raccoon's going to leave on its own accord, the possum, the squirrel, and even the bats, there's methods that allow them to leave on their own. So the idea that we're wrangling or you know, grabbing them or, you know, coming face-to-face for a showdown, that doesn't happen. And the idea of wildlife being aggressive, I think, is totally not true. They can be if they have a reason to.
Right. If they're
when
threatened.
I think aggression,
if they're threatened.
I think unprovoked aggression.
Right.
That doesn't happen.
Right.
I should say nothing's never, but in my experience, that's what it's been. Lots of times when I'm about to open an attic hatch, the client says, I'm going to go wait in the other room because they're afraid something's going to jump out at them and they know something's up there, whether it's the raccoon or the possum or the squirrels. And never has an animal jumped out at me. It would be totally against their instincts.
What's the largest number of animals you've encountered in any single location?
Wow. Flying squirrels are an easy one. Mice, it's hard to keep track. You know, that's
right. They're everywhere.
Yeah. So with flying squirrels, we've removed up to 18 flying squirrels from one attic.
Wow. 18 from
18.
One attic.
Yeah.
Well, mice, the last question in this vein, mice obviously are quite numerous, and once they find a happy, warm place, they're going to stay there and reproduce or bring in all their friends and neighbors from far and wide. How do you know when they're all out?
Great question. Well, with mice, what we do is we'll put there's a couple options that people have. One is we can do what we call diagnostic monitoring. So we're going to place a few traps in the crawl space after we do the work just to make sure nobody's stuck in there. Okay, and typically we'll do that for at least 3 days, and then we'll look at what's going on, and if we see that, you know, we're trapping, you know, a dozen mice every day, or
your work is not done,
then we'll know that, you know, that there's more to do. But typically, after a couple days of that, the work is done, and there are situations where the client's going to continue and maybe work with some other professionals to make sure that they're out, especially if it's a really big population.
Do you get people who don't quite understand the philosophy behind your business and are asking you to exterminate or the animals or poison them? Mm-hmm. And are you able to educate folks on the reasons why that is not the best option?
Right. Oh, yeah, that's a big soapbox issue for me. Commercial poisons, rodenticides, the older generations are... they cause massive hemorrhaging, and it takes many days for it to kill that animal. The more recent rodenticides are central nervous system toxins. Merck Pharmaceuticals has put out technical bulletins to veterinarians to educate them on how to identify rodenticide poisoning in wild and domestic animals. It takes anywhere from 12 hours to 3 days to kill that animal from a slow central nervous system death. Sticky traps are like putting a human part in the image in 4 feet or 5 feet of rubber cement to die. I have literally been into attics where people thought they had mice because they saw droppings. They put down sticky traps, and I have removed bat wings, or not removed bat wings, but found bat wings, entire dead or young bats, a tail of a flying squirrel. It's nasty. So, yeah, it's just really nasty. And I know there's a necessary evil in some situations. You know, if there's a mouse population that's just so high that trapping's not gonna touch it, then sometimes poisons are necessary. But unfortunately, they're being used as a primary form of defense in most, you know, in a vast majority of homes. Mm-hmm. So educating people about this, as you can see, I've spoken about this quite a bit. Many people are aware. Other people are not aware. So educating people around, you know, other options that don't involve poisoning or killing, you know, animals, especially in a way that's quite torturous, is something I really enjoy doing and am able to do every day.
Eric Goldman, owner, operator, and founder, and Brenna Carpenter, office manager of Humane Homes, humanehomesnc.com. One last question, Brenna. In the photo on your website, you are holding what appears to be a squirrel, which squirrels, when held, if they are wildlife and not used to that, they do have long, pointy, sharp front teeth.
They do indeed.
How are you doing this?
That is actually a baby bunny that
I
just grabbed from a neighbor's cat because it was screaming so much.
Oh,
I was like,
this
is full of life. I'm going to try to save it. And so I took it to our wild neighbors, gave them a donation. They are in Hillsboro.
Yes, they are. We've had them on.
Excellent. And wished the little guy the best.
Yeah. Okay. It looks gray like a squirrel. It does not look like a bunny.
Most bunnies I see are like gray and brown.
Are they? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mine are a little on the whiter side out at my place.
Wow.
A little bit.
They're maybe some domestic hybrid.
Dirty blondes.
I don't know.
They're dirty blondes. Anyway, Brenna, thank you. Eric, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Bob.
HumaneHomesNC.com. Give them a shout if you've got wildlife in your dwelling that you would like to get rid of in a humane way.
And can I add just one little thing about rodenticides? They do spread through the food chain, and that's part of why we're so passionate about what we do, because like Eric mentioned, cats, other wildlife can eat them, birds of prey that we love, and then there's a secondary poisoning. And from there, the cleanup crew, opossums and vultures can consume them, and then it builds up in them, and it just spreads. It's a far greater impact than we intend and we usually realize.
Right. Well, let that be a little bit of an educational lesson to cap off this conversation. And thanks a lot. Good luck. HumaneHomesNC.com. We'll see you guys later.